Go ahead.
Mana mana.
Do 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 do.
Mana mana.
Do 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 do.
Mana mana.
Do 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 do.
Mana mana.
Do 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 do.
Mana mana.
Do 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 do.
Mana mana.
Do 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 do. I love it. Welcome back to Stream of Consciousness, everybody. I am Joey Seaweed Rap Stout, and this is Joel Sewing Needle Cox. And thank you for joining us here on the SOC podcast. And if you have not yet voted for your official host of the SOC host 2019. What the hell are you doing, Joel? You look like you smell fire. Is something wrong? Do you have to poop? Is Timmy in the well? What's going on? Tell me, boy.
I'm hearing things.
Okay. All right. So click the link below so you can vote on your official host. If those of you who have not been familiar or have not heard, Joel and I are running a campaign against each other for the official first quarter of 2019 host of the SOC podcast. The numbers right now are, it's neck and neck. Things are very tight at this point, Joel. Anybody's game. It could really go either way. So.
Well, they have until the 31st of December.
You have until the 31st of December to make a vote. You can only vote one time, but you can invite as many friends as you want to vote, and we encourage you to do so. And how are we going to stop from voting more than once? Are we able to do that? No. So you can vote for me as many times as you want. Or don't vote multiple times. Just vote one time. So that's... There's definitely a system in place, and anybody caught voting more than once, we will show up at your house and we will poop in your tennis shoes.
Well, if they're for me, I'm not going to do it.
Don't vote more than once.
Or vote more than once, I don't care.
You don't really, though. At this point, it's all arbitrary. It's a big bunch of bullshit. You want to start a timer for us there, Joel?
Oh, yeah.
Can we change the picture? Because I feel like for the past several episodes, they've been looking at us at an outdated...
outdated? PodCon. This is the newest picture we have of us together as a podcast.
Put another outdated picture. It's the same shit over and over and over again. So
I'm sorry. This is new now.
I'm sorry that I want to keep the show fresh.
That's the new official podcast. Because it was the same logo for almost 2 years.
Okay, well, there's got to be more than one picture of us.
Together? Doing a podcast?
Do the one of us from when we went dune buggy riding. Can you find that one?
But we're not doing a podcast.
So what? It's a picture of us. I like the one of you making the face. That's my favorite. You're making such an awesome face in that picture. Or whatever. I don't give a shit. Put whatever you want on there. I was just saying, everybody's been looking at the same thing. It's getting stagnant. It's stale. Very anemic. Our podcast is becoming...
But you're okay with all the logos we do.
Yeah, whatever. I don't give a shit.
You say that.
I would like it if there was like a rotation of pictures that we could just siphon through, like four or five pictures, and every like 3 or 4 minutes it just changes. Maybe not even that long. Maybe
we used to do that.
5 seconds. I don't want it to change too often though either. Whatever. I don't know. What the audience decide.
What do you want done?
I don't care. Just I want.
Yes, you do.
I feel like the past 5 episodes have been them staring at us.
Cause that's the episode thing for the month. Every month I do a different picture. Do you didn't know this?
Every month, but I'm saying every episode we should do a different picture. That would be nice if we had something different. I'm looking out for the best interest of the audience as the clear and obvious choice as the host of 2019 first quarter. I feel like it's important for me to entertain the audience and give them something new, something fresh, something they're going to enjoy. Put a picture. It doesn't have to be a picture of us. Put up a picture of. What can we put a picture of? Pretty much anything other than looking at our mugs. There you go. No, wait, that's you and Jonesy. That's not fair. I don't like that. It's got to be a picture of the two of us. Or the picture of neither of us. Put up a picture of... There we go. That's the one. That's it. And everybody, here's the new picture of the podcast for this episode. And you're welcome. Everybody who's listening to the show audio only does not give a flying fuck. So we just wasted a whole bunch of their time. Moving on, Joel, what are we talking about today?
I'd like to talk about...
Oh, we lost track of what we're talking about. I like that picture. My arms look beefy in that picture, man. Are they looking at us yet?
We're going to talk about psychedelic drugs.
I'm putting too much on you, and that's my fault. As a
we're going to talk about psychedelic drugs.
Ooh, let's talk about psychedelic drugs.
So, I was doing some research about float tanks.
Yeah, a little throwback to the float tank episode.
And I found out that apparently psychedelic drugs can be used for therapy, which I was unaware of. How do you feel about that?
In what sense can they be used for therapy?
That I don't know yet, because...
Well, like physical therapy? Mental therapy?
For mental therapy.
Oh, that I'm okay with. To a degree.
But how do you think that would work?
Okay, so here's something I really want to talk about, and I know I usually goof around and I say a lot of stupid shit on the show, but this is one thing that actually kind of resonates close to home with me, because I do have friends who have had or have suffered some level of, I don't want to call it mental illness, because that sounds, that's very, it's misleading. They have had, let's say, emotional or issues that have hit more internally, that things that are not physically related. I've had friends who have had issues with diet. I've had friends who have had issues with depression. I've had friends who've had issues with, I go on and on, and I'm not going to start throwing anybody under the bus or start pointing any fingers, but this is one of those things that actually, as much as I goof around, as much as I screw around, as much as I talk shit, this is not something I'm gonna make fun of, because it's a very serious issue. I personally feel that there are times for the prescription drugs and times for not. Sometimes a person with issues such as depression, we'll just start with that one. A person who suffers from depression is there's times where medicine can help, and there's times where medicine, I think, can hinder. And especially like a person who's going off of that medication, someone who's on the medication and then decides that it's time to become, when it comes time to actually start to heal. Because that medication is just a Band-Aid. But when you take that Band-Aid off, it's not like ripping off a Band-Aid. It's a slow peel off. And the person who's then coming down from this now has a whole separate set of issues. There's exhaustion, and there's just a whole nother way of thinking. And they're not themselves. They don't feel like themselves. They feel like they're not in control of their own attitude. And it's a very difficult thing to watch someone go through. People that I've had in my life that have had to deal with this before, and to watch them suffer through this, because it really is, it's legitimately a suffering that they indulge to get themselves back to a healthy state, is it's sort of almost unbearable. I feel for them, and I don't, as much as I feel like the medication maybe possibly helped them, I feel like it would have been better in some circumstances, and by no means am I well educated enough to make an honest decision on this or develop an opinion that is informed, but it appears to me, from the best of my understanding, without having any kind of degree or education in psychological background, it appears to me that the people that then come off of these drugs go through a much more devastating and life-altering effect than they would have if they would have never taken the drugs in the first place. Do you understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you?
So, the way I can relate to this is 2014. I got laid off from Fox Chapel School District. And March of 2013, I moved from my friend's Rob's house in New Kingston to here in Glenshaw.
Okay.
And then a week after I moved here, I started getting really paranoid and freaked out and realizing, not that I screwed up moving here, but some of my finances weren't in order, and like I had a little bit of debt that I was worried about taking care of. I was worried about work, because work started getting a little weird. And I ended up getting on antidepressants because I couldn't focus on stuff. I kept dwelling on things that would go wrong. Like, I'm a worst-case scenario guy. Like, my favorite joke is, oh, what's the worst going to happen? I don't know, Joe, what's the worst can happen? I'll give you five things off the bat of what the worst thing can happen.
Right.
Well, one of the problems I have is that when I get sick or I get, like, not feeling well, I dwell on that stuff. So, like, I have seasonal allergies.
Now, just as a public service announcement before you go any further on this one, I want to say that I think that a lot of people, just anybody who right now is listening to us, because I think, let's say that in my opinion, that there's many people who maybe who have mental issues. And I hate saying mental issues. That sounds so shitty from what I'm actually trying to say. But people who maybe like suffer from anywhere from mild to extreme depression, podcast listeners are more likely to be the type, the personality type, to maybe be to have those types of issues. Is that fair to say? Am I being shitty towards anyone, or am I being wrong?
You're not being shitty, but a lot of people listen to podcasts. The right. thing is,
when everybody all walks of life.
I think the best thing to say is everybody has problems. Everyone has different ways to deal with problems.
Exactly the point that I should just jump straight into that instead of trying.
Everybody has problems. Everyone has different ways of dealing with problems.
Right. We all have times where we feel like we're not doing the right decisions. So that's what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I
myself am a very fix yourself kind of guy. Like, if I know something's going wrong, I want to fix it. Like, when I was younger, and you know that they had those Dynet commercials for like, oh, this manual will help you fix your brain. I'm like, I want to get that thing. Not know anything about Scientology or all the crazy shit involved in that book.
Right.
But like, it sounded like the kind of thing I'd be interested in. Like, I want to know how to use my brain better. I want to know how to do all these, like, those things. Learn how to do math in your head and do all this other, like, that kind of stuff. Like, those little tricks and tips of how to do all these cool things, make yourself look awesome. That's my kind of thing.
And that's a confidence booster, too. Yeah. I think, like, anytime, and that's really one thing that I see from, I don't know why I'm being so politically correct right now, because that's very...
Just say it.
Okay, so people who suffer from problems such as, like that, and I don't want to keep harping on depression, but, like, let's say any type of...
Anxiety.
Okay, great word, excellent. Anxiety. People who have these anxieties are often intimidated by the
giving help
desire to get help or to improve themselves. They're more likely to be, there's two different types of people. You put a problem in front of someone and there's either the person who goes, I don't know, but I'll figure it out, or there's the person who goes, I don't know, I can't touch that.
But also there's two strains of thought of, I don't want it to be hooked on pills, or I'm okay with taking pills. So
all right, so let's wrangle back into the medication and psychedelic drugs.
Let me get to the medication part.
Okay.
So my job was causing me a lot of stress. And that's why I got on the antidepressants, because it helped my anxiety. I got laid off a year later, and I didn't need the drugs because I didn't have that issue. Drugs just sometimes, depending on the problem, they mask stuff.
Did you feel they were a crutch?
No, it wasn't a crutch. It helped me like be able to actually function.
Okay.
Because the problem was I needed another job, and I couldn't get out of that situation. Because I was seeing a therapist at the time. And they sent me to I forget what they call them. Basically, a therapist cannot prescribe you medication.
Okay.
There's another doctor that can do that. So she had me go to this other guy. He went through whatever, and I got the prescription. Well, long story short, once I left that job, I didn't need, like, my health care went out, so I couldn't get any more of the pills. I didn't need them. I was on top of the world because I didn't have that stressor anymore.
Okay, so then you went off the medication.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is...
How did that affect you, going off the medication?
I didn't have that problem, so I didn't need them.
But, I mean, like, when you stopped the medication, did you feel different, or were you just like, okay, I'm done with the medication, now you're good?
Yeah.
So, okay, because I fully believe there's a difference between being depressed or being anxious and suffering from depression.
What I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is, if you need medication, sometimes there's an underlying problem you need to work through, or figure out what that problem is.
In your case, it was your job.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not that easy to find that problem. Sometimes you might have a latent problem. Like my one friend, he is doing, I guess, when he goes to therapy, he does hypnosis therapy, where they go through a script, and she says stuff, he goes into a trance, and he starts revealing stuff that he didn't even know he's revealing. So sometimes we have so much repressed memories, or we bury stuff so deep that we don't think about it.
That's one thing, and for me, like, I've always thought of therapy as kind of a joke. Like, I've met some therapists, and I'll tell you, like, they are fucked up in
their head. Here's the problem. Just like everything, there are good therapists, there are bad therapists. Right. You have to find the therapist right for you.
Right, and my concern is that a lot more therapists are got into the job for the wrong reasons. They're not capable, because that is not a job for everybody.
You
really have to have, not just... it's not a learned skill, it's an inherent skill.
When I was in college, I knew this guy named Matt Yatsko, and I'm not throwing him on the bus, he went to school for psychology.
Okay.
And he, who knows what he does now, I haven't talked to the kid in forever. But But he had this greatest thing. We were talking about, I forget what we were talking about, but it all came down to there are different types of tired. Hypothetically, my dad was an operating engineer. He worked with his hands. He did all the stuff. He comes home to the day. He's tired. He doesn't want to move. He's physically drained.
Right.
When I was doing my internship, I'd have days where I'd be working on these projects trying to figure stuff out. I come, I don't want to think. I just lay on the couch and just stare at the walls. Don't want to think.
You're not physically tired. You're mentally tired. Yeah. It's a whole different type of lethargy.
Exactly. Then you've got people like Yatsko who went to psychology. And so, for example, they're talking to people all... They have 7 sessions that day of helping people. He is mentally drained. He's, like, emotionally drained. There's different drainages.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And
so in order to do that kind of job, you need to be able to take a lot of emotional strain.
It's a very strenuous job. And I think that, like I said, I don't think everybody is... There's a lot of people that want to help, and they maybe believe that. I think some people are that get into that job, and people that study that are maybe looking for help more than they actually are looking to help.
My theory, so, as I said in another episode, I researched float tanks. And this one dude, Aubrey Marcus, him and Joe Rogan talk a lot. They have a project together, they do a thing called On It. So a lot of supplements and whatever. But they were talking in one episode, and Joe Rogan mentioned about, like, how you'll notice some of these MMA fighters and, like, karate experts or masters of these martial arts. When you think of a guy who does martial arts, do you think of some burly, angry guy or some calm, like, okay guy?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to say, I would probably think of somebody more calm, because that seems like something that's more mental than it is physical.
Because one of the things he mentions, like, some of the most deadliest guys he knows are giant teddy bears. Like, they don't have to go prove themselves. Like, I can beat that guy in a fight. He's like, I don't need to prove anything. I've mastered my art.
No, right.
I'm fine. Well, at the same time, with, like, psychiatrists and like, doing that kind of stuff, some people have to prove, I can fix all these people.
Right.
And other people are just like, I can help people. And they can take that mental load.
Right.
And then they can basically throw it away. It doesn't eat on them.
Well, then that's any job. But whether it's a psychiatrist or Burger King.
There are people.
There's good and bad people.
There are people who work for YouTube and Facebook that go through all the videos of YouTube and Facebook. And they make sure that they're safe for work. Okay. They're appropriate. Which also means you've got to watch a lot of shitty videos. Some people have the stomach for that. Other people do not.
Right, right. Nobody's meant to do everything.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, you've got some people that are sitting there, like, okay, crisis line. You've got some people, you tell them, this guy lost his arm, he's bleeding, they're dying, what do I do? Well, put a tourniquet on, this and that, calm down, we're fine, da-da. You got other people like...
I'm going in panic mode.
Yeah, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, no, that's one of those things, like, for me personally, I went through and did classes on EMT, and that was one of those things, like, I feel that if I showed up to a scenario where somebody got into a car wreck, ejected from their car seat, or whatever, arm got ripped off, skin got pulled back, whatever, like, whatever gruesome thing that would make most people kind of cringe in fear, I'm the type of person who I think, and I have, fortunately, never had to deal with that particular scenario. I feel that I'm the type of person who could remain calm and collective through that. There's a lot of things that I'm not capable of, and I'm the first person to admit my faults. But that's something that I feel is a strong point for me. But every person is different. Every person handles and does a job differently. It's one of those things that I just think that certain people are meant to be certain things and some people are not. And sadly, most people don't find their true calling in life. Most people are not capable of saying, this is what truly, honestly, what I want to do. I have been told multiple times by multiple people that I should have become a therapist. I have zero desire to become a therapist. As calm as I can be, and as much as I'm willing to listen to other people's problems, as willing as I am in certain contexts when I care about someone to help them resolve their issues through whatever means. Like, it's not always a matter of what's right and what's wrong. Sometimes it's what's best. Sometimes it's picking the lesser of the evils. But at the end of the day, I'm kind of fucked up. And I don't see me being able to help everybody. I can help some people, but I can't help everyone. And that's why one of those things that I could never see me going to school and studying to become a therapist. I'm just not capable of that. And anybody who's listening to our podcast would go, fuck no, that's not the kind of guy I want helping me out. But there are some times where I am useful in that situation.
So, I have a lot of friends that I talk to. And, like, when I'm at work, I talk to a lot of people via Google Hangouts or, like, Facebook Messenger. And I've got a core group of friends that I talk to pretty much every day. And, like, they're the people I talk to whenever, hey, listen to this stupid thing. And vice versa. Like, my one buddy would be like, I hate people. I just had to deal with this jackass X, Y, and Z happened. And my other friends are like, yeah, so my husband basically didn't come home last night. And I think he cheated on me. What do you think? I've got friends that basically, it's like a support network.
Sometimes it's not a matter of offering help. It's a matter of just listening
exactly.
to the problem. So, and like you were saying before.
And a lot of times I hear,
way through the problems,
I hear the comment of, I'm sorry I unload this on you. I'm like, I tell you my problems, you tell me yours.
That's what friends are for.
Exactly. But like sometimes, it's not even needing therapy. It's just having someone to talk to that will listen to you and not...
And you, of all people, know better than anybody that there's times where in between takes, in between us doing shows, I unload issues with you that I wouldn't tell or share with anybody else. Like, you are hands down one of my, if not, you're my closest confidant. You are the person who I tell the stories to and the secrets to that nobody else knows. You're the person I go to for that. And just being able to say it. And usually, by the time I'm done talking, and, you know, anybody who listens to our show knows that I talk to no end. But sometimes being able to just get that stuff off my chest and being able to say, this is the problem. And you don't go, well, Joe, you're an asshole. Or I support you. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But a lot of times, I'm all done talking and I go, this and this and this is the problem and this is what I'm dealing with and this and this and this and let's not talk about this on the show, but let's talk about this on the show and this is bugging me and blah, blah, blah. And when I'm all done, sometimes your answer is, okay. And that's it. And that's all the therapy that I needed was just to be able to unload those thoughts. And how often have I said something to you in confidence and then partway through saying it go, I figure out my own issue and my own problem. And I think it's a lot of times like that's what people need.
And sometimes you have friends that you just talk to that can do that for you. Like, I've got a lot of times when I had problems with people or coworkers. When I first started dating Tara, I can't, and it bothers me, I can't remember now who I used to talk to. But, one second.
That was Joel coughing, not sharing a secret with me off air.
But, when I first started dating Tara, I had like three or four friends that I was...
If Tara's listening to the show, she thinks you just told me some shit right there.
Yeah, she knows I did. So... I had three or four friends that I was constantly talking to, like, well, when should I kiss her? When should I do this? What should I do? What does this mean? What does that mean? Do you think she likes me? Should I go out there? Should I ask her out? Should I wait? Like, all these questions. And, like, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've got a couple friends that I, like, female friends that I told everything. Not everything, but, like...
Right, you opened up to.
It's like, so, what do I do? I think I like her. I offered to go to her high school reunion. I don't even know this girl. I don't even know what Bedford is. I'd agree to go to the high school reunion with her. I think I like her. I've been doing stupid things. Like, yeah, I think she does like you. I'm like, well, should I kiss her on the first date? Should I kiss her on the second date? What should we do for a date? Like, is this...
You are definitely that type of person that needs to have this all figured out before you move into it. You are not somebody who can just go with the flow. Like, you don't... Not that you can't roll with the punches, but you like to mentally be prepared. Like the whole, should I kiss her first date, second date? Mm. You kiss her whenever the moment's right. But
when's that moment right?
Right, and that's exactly what it is. You are like, you have to know ahead of the moment when the moment's going to be right. That's just the way you are as a person. Like, not that you can't figure
out. Here's a secret, folks. I sucked at dating. There are so many girls that I asked that are like, I don't like you as a friend, or I have a boyfriend. I'm like, how did I not see this?
Yeah, you've been caught up in the bad end of that a couple of times, unfairly, because, and I've always thought you were an amazing person, that's why we've been such good friends for so long, but you've definitely been on the downside of the dating scenario where things have, you've been, I remember there's one girl, I don't even know if I want to tell this story.
Tell the story.
No, let me tell the story.
Tell the story.
There was a girl, and I can't for the life of me remember her name, let's just call her Sun Ho. So you went out, you asked Sun Ho out on, you were like, let's go hang out. It wasn't like a date officially. I think it was just one of those, like, you were just hanging out with her. We go, me, you, her friend. I think she had two different friends with her. I can't for the life of me remember. And one of our buddies. It was basically, I didn't know anybody except for you, basically, at this thing. So we go out and we have a couple of drinks. We're hanging out and I'm being me and I'm being chatty and stuff with her, with everybody. I'm just being an ass. In the meantime, I think this was like whenever Sarah and I first started really seeing each other. So we were, I was still very infatuated and early on and very, you know, just involved in that. And something to the effect of, at the end of the night, you asked her if she wanted to go out again. Or no, you didn't even, you were about to ask her, I think, and I might be telling the story completely wrong, and I apologize if I am. But basically, she was kind of like, she was like, hey, your friend Joe's really cool. Does he have any single friends? She asked you that. Do you remember this?
I don't remember this at all.
We went to Station Square. We went to, was it Bar Louie or something? You don't remember this?
Vaguely.
I can't remember the girl's name either way. But it was like, so, like you got, you were like, you asked this girl on a date, and at the end of the date, she asked you to hook her up with one of your friend's friends kind of thing. Like, it was just this really awkward scenario. Because, like, here's the other side. Is you are, like, the perfect, you've been, like, the perfect boyfriend, and now you're married, and this great husband, and you've been very giving, very kind, and very considerate, and you're one of those people that are very thoughtful and thought out, but you're not always on top of, knowing, you're not always good at reading the situations and acting to, like you're not great at the initial part of dating, but once a girl's with you, you're prime territory. You are a girl that you're a guy that girls fall in love with. Whereas like I'm the exact opposite of the kind of guy. Like first date, I'm the shit. Girls going on a first date with me and they are like, oh my god, he's so much fun and he's so crazy and he's zany. And then they get to know me and they're like, wow, that got old real quick. Like, what a dickhead this guy is. We have very opposite sides of that. We're like I'm kind of, and I think part of it is most girls sort of like a little bit of an asshole because they sort of want to like tame that guy. Mm-hmm. And then they get to know me and they're like, maybe he's not a really big asshole, but he's still kind of an asshole. Like, I don't really have that well balanced going on. Whereas like you're too nice of a guy, and then like that's something girls want to have a future with, but it doesn't always come across in the first date.
Yeah.
Like they have to get to know you before they realize that you are the kind of guy that they do want to be with. Whereas with me, they're like, oh, he seems like so much fun, and then they're like, oh no, I was wrong. Bad
flashback
choice.
To a Valentine's Day. Right. So I was kind of seeing this girl, and she liked movies. So, me being me going, huh, doing Valentine's Day together, hanging out Valentine's Day, guess I should get her something. So, I talked to my art teacher friend, and I was like, hey, what should I do? She goes, you should make her a basket. I'll help you. I said, okay. So, I went out. I think I bought a gift certificate to, like, the Waterfront, because we kept going to Waterfront on dates and stuff. Got her that, got her candy, got her popcorn, got all this movie stuff, related stuff, made the basket. It was Valentine's Day, put it all together, and she canceled on me that night.
I remember you telling me this story before. We actually talked about this on the show on Valentine's Day, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, I was livid. I went out and saw the movie Jumper that night, and I just remember screaming the entire way to the theater. I saw it, came back, screamed all the way home. And then she called me the next day, and I think I tore into her.
So, needless to say, there was no second date. There was no first date at this point.
No, there were other dates. That was a train wreck. That was...
Well, and here's the thing.
That was Schrodinger's girlfriend.
Schrodinger's girlfriend.
Is she my girlfriend or is she not my girlfriend? Are we dating or are we not dating?
We've all been there.
Yep.
Well, and here's... And this that actually kind of brings up a very... a very relative point is sometimes, a lot of times, in a relationship, regardless of what the relationship is, when you put two people in a scenario, there's this inherent desire for the, if things are going good, then great. But there's 7 billion people on the planet, and the odds of you finding that one person...
Here's a fun fact.
Go ahead.
They always say if you're one in a million. If you're one in a million... There's 7,000 other people like you.
and I agree with that, because I don't think that any person, I don't believe that there's one person in the whole wide world that is perfect for you. I think there are thousands.
You tell me I should be my wife?
That's not at all what I'm saying. What I'm saying
I think you're trying to break my wife and I
out. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there's a multitude of people that you might be perfect for. But there are several factors. Like, the timing has to be right.
So, before I met Tara, like, after, every time I quote, dated somebody for a while or tried to date them for a while, I literally took a year off. I was like, fuck this. I'm done. I want to be living single for the rest of my life.
Cleanse the palate.
So yeah, we'll say cleanse the palate.
Like before you do a taste test, you have to eat like the saltine cracker.
It's more like scorched earth. I don't want to do this anymore. Fuck this. I'm not finding anybody. And then one day I ran the numbers.
A little more of a slash and burn type of scenario, but okay.
Nuke it for more, but just to be safe. I one day sat down and ran the numbers and said, how do you meet people? Well, I'm not going to meet people at a bar because I don't want bar people. I'm not meeting people at work because you don't get your meat where you make your bread.
Yeah, you don't shit where you eat.
You don't meet people. There's all these places you don't meet people. I'm like, okay. Well, then I gotta get new places. I'm like, I don't wanna go there, don't wanna go there, don't wanna go there.
What do you think about Tinder? Not necessarily for you, but in general for people.
Tinder is for one-night stands.
So you're for it?
I am a happily married man. I have no reason to go on Tinder.
Alright.
What I'm saying is, depending on what you want, is the application you use. You don't go on eHarmony for a one-night stand.
And that's, again, that's kind of like along the lines of what I was saying, whereas there's different people, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
And if you are, let's say you're a bar hopper, let's say you're young, you're single, you don't have a family, the bar might be a great place to meet someone. Ed Sheeran, who's, I know, one of your favorite artists, you're looking at like, you're going to kill me. Okay, obviously you hate Ed Sheeran, I'm aware of this, but he has lyrics in a
song. I will eat your soul, you ginger.
But he said something, the club is not the best place to meet people, so the bar is where I go. And even though you hate Ed Sheeran, you got to respect that that's actually an intelligent perception of...
But you don't meet the people at the bar either.
Okay, you don't. But there are people that's a good place for them to meet. Drinkers.
Yes.
If you are the type of person who...
That is true. My coworker did meet her husband at the bar.
Right. But that's not for everybody. That's not the best place to meet people for a good portion of the population.
When I ran the number, I'm like, I'm never going to meet a girl at the bookstore. I'm never going to meet a girl at the arcade.
No? Well, okay. First of all, I disagree with both of those statements. I think those are both great places for you to meet a person.
I'm saying I won't.
I'm saying you, personally. That's where I would go. If I had to say, where is a place for Joel to meet someone... Now, obviously, we're not playing this game because I don't want to piss off your wife because she will fucking kill me. But let's go back, you know, before you met her.
Let's go back to circa 2007, 2004. Okay. Well, actually, 2004 to 2008.
Let's call 2004. Just 2004, Joel, where would I send him to go meet someone? I would say the bookstore, and I would say the arcade, because those are your type. You meet a girl there, she's probably your type.
Yes, I'm saying they never showed up, is what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah, no, in all fairness, if there's one girl in the arcade, there's 17 nerds trying to hump
her. Uh-huh.
But I'm just saying that's probably where the girl that you are interested in is. Okay, bookstore's probably a better call for you. Me, I'm not going to the bookstore. You get a girl that likes to read books, she's not going to find a whole lot of common interests with me.
You don't know. She might want to teach you a few things.
Maybe so. She might, that goes back to the first date thing. Yes, we're going to have a good first date. I'm going to have some fun with her for the first month. And then
but you're what we call a project guy.
No, I am not a project guy. There's no changing me. I am who I am, and that's all that you're going
to
get.
So, you need to tell me if...
What are you doing here? I don't like what's going on here. Well, let me... Okay, well, you're digging up whatever it is you're digging up. I'll explain my point here. I don't think that everybody's meant to be with each other, and I think that there's...
I agree with that.
There's this feeling that when you put two people in an environment... Two people find each other attractive. She's sexy, and she finds you handsome, and the two of you initially have some sort of
chemistry.
So you have some sort of chemistry. That does not mean that down the road you are going to be serendipitous together.
There's short-term chemistry. There's long-term chemistry.
Okay, but my point is that what I'm trying to get to is that. Just because you have chemistry initially with someone and then it doesn't happen does not make one of you a bad person.
No.
There's no negative to not being right for someone.
So, you're telling me...
I can't stress that enough, though. Like, that's something that I so deeply feel that I think, and more so you see it in girls, where they take responsibility for a failed relationship. They feel like, and I've worked with a lot of girls over the years, especially whenever I worked in the restaurant, I've worked with a lot of young girls that went through a lot of different relationships, and I think a lot of them hung on to relationships because they felt that if it didn't work out, that was reflective of who they were as a person, as opposed to how they interacted with that one particular person. Not everybody can be together. Not everybody's right for one another. Not everybody can have that level of chemistry that maintains. Just because you find someone attractive doesn't mean that you're going to stay attracted. Not necessarily stay attracted. You might still be attracted, but if you don't have that ability to maintain a healthy, happy relationship, that doesn't make them a bad person. Doesn't make you a bad person. Doesn't mean one of you did wrong. It just means that together, you're not right. She might be amazing for someone else, and you might be perfect for another girl, but the two of you together are not right.
So you're telling me, if these two came up to you who were sisters,
oh my God,
and said to you,
I hate you,
Joe,
every single episode, the past, I don't know how many episodes, oh my God, so we're continually going back to...
So these two come up to you at the bookstore. Go there and get a magazine.
Winnie Cooper and, what the hell's her name in Shameless? Emmy Rossum from Shameless. Oh my God, I can't remember her name, and I've seen the show a million, I love the show. Joel continually throws this back in my face. Is this not your screensaver? Like, how did you so quickly bring this back up again?
Don't worry about it.
Several episodes later, and it's still available.
If those two came up to you at the bookstore, you're standing in line with your magazine, and they both come up to you and said, Joe.
Okay, now, in all fairness, between Danica McKellar, Winnie Cooper, and Emily Rossum, I believe that I could happily live forever after with the two of them. If they were like, hey, let's all collectively move in together, settle down, and...
let's say they came to you and said, we have a bet. We believe that one of us can make you very happy. We think we can make you a better person.
Oh, I'm willing to change for them. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. At least from the moment they say that until I bust a nut. and then I turn into a whole different person. Because the horny Joe versus bust a nut Joe is two totally different people. There's a whole different category of me. Whereas, like, and this is one of those things where, like, I read something one time where they did a study where they asked these guys all these, like, insane questions where they were like, would you do this, would you do that? Like just anything from, like, I think they had them doing, like, math equations all the way up to asking them morally... questionable scenarios. How would they handle XYZ? And these guys would first, I think they showed them like a bunch of images of like maybe like pornographic images or something. So they got these guys basically all riled up. Like they were like, okay, so they get these guys all ready to go and put them in a scenario where they're like, I want to get some. And then they ask them all these questions, like all these like varying levels of morality and intellectual questions. And the guys answered one way. And then they, like, said, okay, go relieve yourself. Doctor, heal thyself kind of thing. And then they brought him back in and they said, okay, and they asked them either the same or similar questions. And the guys went, you know what? On second thought, maybe I don't want to hook up with a chick with a penis. You know what I mean? This was a legit study. I don't remember who did it, and it was a while ago I read it, but yeah, these guys went from willing to...
I am giving this research a slow count.
The willingness of men to do, and this is one of those weird things that I love research and studies and statistics, especially whenever it comes to
coming
and when it comes to the world of debauchery and deviance. I get so into these ones and I get really carried away with reading all these articles and really studying and learning and stuff like that. But it's amazing how like guys can change their mentality simply based on whether or not how recently they have
relieved themselves.
Yeah, whether or not. But now women have, and I've read this. This is a different article, but a similar concept where women, once they get, they're as wet as a fishbowl, they are more susceptible to very unique and strange turn-ons. Women are turned on by things that most of us would find unhealthy, such as like they showed women like videos of animals, like monkeys doing it or whatever, and it stimulated a part of the brain that caused arousal. And even though women themselves were admittedly like no, I'm not into bestiality, or I'm not really into animal porn or whatever, for some strange reason women are more turned on by the odd, the unique, by these different, even if they're not willing to.
Are you saying if you show them the Island of Dr. Moreau, they'll get it turned on?
Maybe, I guess so. Anything that is designed, not anything, but a wider range of things. Like if you show a guy something that's not not in his wheelhouse, you show a guy something like I can't think of it. Let's say you show a guy a shemale, and that's like not his thing, he's not into that, he's not going to get turned on. He's actually going to get disgusted by it. If you show a guy who's like avidly anti homosexuality, you show him gay porn, obviously he's not as likely to get turned on by it. Whereas women are more accepting of things that are, you know, even if it's not something they condone, like say bestiality. That was one of the things that I read in the article. There was many things, and I can't remember what all of them were. But even if it's not something that they're specifically attracted to, it causes higher levels of arousal. But women were more likely to make good moral judgments while turned on. Not saying they always do. Women get turned on and they make bad decisions also. That's how assholes get laid at the bar. But men make worse decisions while horny. It's a hormonal thing. True story. I didn't do the study. I read it, but I read a lot of those weird
stuff. I have some female friends that can prove you wrong about being horny and making bad decisions.
I have some female friends that could prove me right.
I have some NDAs I've signed that I cannot talk about.
Well, I think that is that, and we need to wrap this one up. So thank you everybody for joining us here on Stream of Consciousness, this very special episode of debauchery and villainy. Any of the views and beliefs of Joel and I are not based on any medical relevance other than maybe some shit that we've seen on the internet.
We are not doctors. We are not lawyers. We are not experts in anything. We're just two guys bullshitting, talking about what we think about.
So please don't refrain from seeking medical help if you do have emotional or mental issues, and please redress those as you see, not even as you see fit. Go talk to somebody who is well better
educated. Yes, talk to professionals.
Yes, speak to the professionals, and we wish you all well, and we love you, and good night.
And make sure that if you need help, you go talk to somebody.
Yeah, and have your pets spayed or neutered.
Yes.
All right, disco.